call me back to my Montana home.
Well, good evening, everyone. Welcome to Perception Management with Keith Rogers here on Republic Broadcasting Network. I thank you for joining us tonight. The phone lines will be closed for right now here, but I have a special guest tonight. Today is Sunday, the 20th day of December here, which would be my mother's birthday if she was alive. But good evening all from Western Montana. Please join us in the chat room at perceptionmanagement.chatandgo.com. Tonight's theme is advanced reconnaissance, and there's a reason why I picked that for a theme here, because I have a guest tonight who's been our man on the ground, I guess you can call it, and it's a pleasure to have him on the show tonight. Lawrence B. Wilkerson, a retired colonel there with the United States Army, who was also former chief of staff there to then Secretary of State Colin Powell. Since the end of his military career, Mr. Wilkerson has publicly criticized many aspects of the Iraq War, including his own perception of the Powell's presentation to the UN, as well as other aspects of American policy in the Middle East. Mr. Wilkerson has arrived as an Army officer, piloting an 086A helicopter then. He logged about 1,100 combat hours over a year, and he flew low and slow through Vietnam, and you've heard me talk about Vietnam and the hype that that whole thing was, as well as involved in one incident where he prevented a war crime by purposely placing his helicopter between a position that was full of civilians. And I'll be reading from Wikipedia here, where it says Mr. Wilkerson was responsible for the review of the information of the Central Intelligence Agency, and you know me and how I feel about the CIA. But anyway, the failure to realize that evidence was a faulty that has been attributed to the limited time, which was only 1 week back then, that he had to review the data. And the subsequent developments that led Wilkerson to become disillusioned, like many Americans have become, combined that the detainee abuse with the ineptitude of the post-invasion planning for the Iraq war, which was also wrapped with both this blanket of secretive decision-making. And overall, you get the reason for his speaking out. So the listeners who know me, as I said, know my views of the CIA, their so-called intelligence. You can add in the brackets there. And I've had the 74 previous shows documenting not only the lives of American boys lost in battle, but the millions of others of which we aren't supposed to know or care about. We Americans are told that we are only the victims and that others burn our flag and chant death to America because they hate us. Those who many like the French underground who formed their resistance to the illegal occupation of their country, like renaming a POW to an enemy combatant or of a resistance fighter to an insurgent. In general, it's always, we're going to bomb you and you'd better not bomb back or fight back. So with that, I'm going to play just a short clip here. It's just an intro here, because this clip means a lot to me, because this was the America that I grew up in. This is from a former CIA officer.
When I was a kid, the American flag was something absolutely marvelous. Whenever the American flag went by in a parade, we took our hats off, put our hands over our hearts, and we really felt it, because this is the symbol of the United States and the way the United States should behave. We have to have something like that in order to hold ourselves together.
Well, there you go. So with that introduction, I'd like to welcome Mr. Wilkerson to tonight's show of Perception Management. Good evening, Mr. Wilkerson, and we really thank you for coming on.
Good evening. Good to be with you, and to be, even if it's only vicariously, back in Western Montana.
Oh, you've been here before?
Oh, I fish there a lot, Northern Idaho and Western Montana and area around there.
Yeah, it sure is beautiful up here, I'll tell you. Anyway, I want to get right into this. Yeah, it is. It is. Very few immigrants come here because of the cold, so that's kind of a plus in a way. But anyway, your criticism of the U.S. foreign policy, in which you said back in April of 2018 in an interview with Real News Network, why you believe the current president can do anything that he pleases in regards to the armed forces of the United States. And that reason, you said, is because the American people are apathetic and that their representatives in Congress are cowards, who, but without a few exceptions, Aaron, Now, I know you, like myself, really don't care much for Trump or his policies, because it seems like he's been doing or unraveling much of what my worthless cousin Obama has done. But do you kind of have the same feelings about what Obama was doing with his Middle East wars and stuff?
I do, sadly enough, because as a reaction to George W. Bush, I actually campaigned for then-candidate Obama and saw him as a fresh ingredient, if you will, to the problem in Washington, and saw him as a person who, at least as he said it at the time, was opposed to many of the things that I was opposed to. Over the course of his 8 years, culminating, I think, in his most atrocious decision, the NATO operation in Libya. Libya is now a basket case and spreading arms all over North Africa because of that. He succumbed to the same powers and pressures and political opportunism and corporate structure that influences decision-making more than anything else as everyone else before him. So he turned out to be just as bad as George W. Bush, and in some ways even worse when it came to prosecution of whistleblowers, for example, legitimate whistleblowers, supposedly protected by federal law. He prosecuted more of them than any president in our history.
Right, and you agree, like many Americans, that we need that oversight of whistleblowers and also the protection for them, correct?
Absolutely. It's criminal what we do now. Even with the legislation that the Congress passed, and they passed that with tongue-in-cheek in some respects because they knew how the executive branch was going to violate what they passed. But in most respects now, whistleblowers are hunted down and punished, imprisoned or their lives ruined or both, rather than being rewarded or being patted on the back and being told patriotic dissent is the most fundamental aspect of a democratic republic that has any aspirations to being democratic.
Right. Well, it's like I sent you a couple of links there. I don't know if you're able to watch them or yet, but it was on the Vietnam War about the lead up to that and how the United States interfered in those electoral processes. And, of course, then we have Nixon who gets involved. And, of course, this is and I brought this up here quite a few times on this show here with Latin America, because the United States used to be a beacon that as those countries witnessed our revolution here of breaking free from empire, that they too broke free from Spain. So your 22 countries or 23 with Spain in there, they too started their revolutions there, and they had to succumb there to the empire of the United States, who would not let them go.
Yep. I'm just reading David Vine's new book, The United States of War. And one of the things he points out in Chapter 11, I believe it is that there are people throughout the world now, since we have 800-plus imperial bases throughout the world, the rest of the world, for comparison, including Russia and China, has less than 80. We have over 800. He remarks in Chapter 11 that we are, in some cases, like Okinawa and other places where we're really not very much beloved, we are like the British troops who garrison themselves in our homes and our quarters during our revolution. One of the reasons, supposedly, we fought the revolution in the first place, we are now inflicting on other countries throughout the world.
Yeah, I have a friend over there that's he goes on Twitter there by Trap Soldier there. I've never asked him whether he was a U.S. soldier or not there, but one of his definitive things that he always talks about is like in Okinawa, as you mentioned there, about U.S. plane parts and stuff dropping on the schools over there, as well as what the military actions are with, say, rape allegations and stuff. And this isn't a way to represent America, is it?
No, and it's really egregious, because in 1993, 4, and 5, I made a decision with the Commandant of the Marine Corps' blessing to go down and be the first soldier in the U.S. Marine Corps War College at Quantico, Virginia, to be on the faculty. And I wound up, because my boss died of cancer almost a month or two before I got there, wound up being the acting director for a while. So I was privy to what the Marine Corps was doing at its headquarters in terms of studies, and I knew that the Marine Corps had determined that the only reason Marines were on Okinawa was, one, they cost less on Okinawa because the Japanese home islands, of course, funded part of the cost, and two, because the Marines were afraid, the headquarters Marine Corps was afraid, if they brought the Marines home to California or anywhere else in continental United States, they'd be stood down. They wouldn't be kept. They'd be reduced from the top line of the Marine Corps' instrument. So there's no strategic reason for the Marines to be on Okinawa. You may have noted that the recent move by the new commandant of the Marine Corps to give the Marines some strategic reason for being on Okinawa is as preposterous as they're not having one at all. Because what he's saying is those few Marines are going to take to the South China Sea in a new form of warfare, very, very lethal, and they're going to take on the Chinese in the South China Sea, which is almost risible. It's almost laughable. It's almost a joke.
Yeah, I don't know if you've caught that video on the coming war on China by John Pilger, but
I know John, and I've talked with him about it, and I listened to Chaz Freeman, Ambassador Chaz Freeman, who probably knows more about China than any man alive today in the English-speaking world, speaks fluent Mandarin too, Taiwanese, and several other languages. And Chaz was on a webinar for about an hour and a half, 2 hours the other night, and he really convinced me, I think he's probably right, that we're as close to a real confrontation with China right now over Taiwan as we have been since we effected the rapprochement in the 70s. And he's very worried about it. And I am too, as a consequence of his briefing, because I hold him as one of the, if not the most prolific and proficient expert in U.S.-China relations. We have just taken the wrappers off our old policy formulated by Nixon and Kissinger in the beginning of the 70s and then brought to a formal nature by Carter later. We've just taken that and thrown it away. There's no more strategic ambiguity. There's no more China says Taiwan's a part of China, and we say Taiwan is a free country of 23 million people, but it is part of China. And we just sort of, you know, lie to each other. We've been lying to each other for about 45 years, but we know we're lying to each other. That's what diplomacy is all about, and we prevented a war. Now, with Pompeo having said 7 days, as I recall, after the 3 November elections, that Taiwan is not, I repeat, not a Chinese entity, not a part of China, we've changed that completely. We now have strategic clarity. Well, the problem with strategic clarity is, Mr. Pompeo, you got to back it up. And do you think Americans want to go to war with China? Do you think Americans want to have nuclear missiles landing in their homeland? Because that's what we're talking about if we go to war with China. It inevitably is going to wind up in a strategic nuclear exchange. Every war game I've ever played, over 30 of them in the military, wound up with that being the reality of the game.
Well, it's reminiscent of what I've read in history about what was going on in the 50s, of how the U.S. was in Taiwan, flying air support in and everything. And again, this is back over the same thing. But I listened recently, Mr. Wilkerson, to a former Mossad who's over in Russia now. And I have some comments here about Iran I'd like you to clear up here for us. But one of the reasons he says that the United States, for them, it is impossible for them to take Iran in any way, because it would probably take over 1 million troops on the ground, was the fact that the minute they try to go into Iran, that China will take Hong Kong and Taiwan and probably adventure more out with those Spratly Islands, which under the 1943 Cairo Agreement, were all named as being returned to China in the first place under that agreement.
Well, Formosa, now Taiwan, has a long history. Chaz, Ambassador Freeman, rehearsed it for all of us the other night in that webinar I referred to. And that history is full of exchanges and different powers having responsibility for or even sovereignty over Taiwan, other than the Taiwans. You know, there are really two kinds of people on Formosa, Taiwan. There are the Taiwans, as we call them, and they are Taiwanese. And then there are the Chinese. Many of the Chinese, of course, came with Chiang Kai-shek when he was beaten by Mao Zedong and had to retreat to Formosa, Taiwan, in order to survive. It's really the period from then, about 1950, 1951, to the present, that we're looking at in terms of history we ought to be very much aware of. Not saying the previous history isn't important, but that's the history we should be very aware of. And the history of the agreements that we made, which were to recognize that Taiwan was a part of China, but also to recognize, Beijing recognized, that it was not to be that they would use force to make that a reality. That was the agreement, and Beijing agreed to it, we agreed to it, and it's held for almost half a century now. And now all of a sudden we've decided, and this is what Chaz talked about as being so laughable if it weren't so sad and dangerous, we're at a position now where, and China's at a position now where, they probably could take Taiwan and present us with a fait accompli. So why would we want strategic clarity now, when China has built its armed forces up to the point where it could take Taiwan and say to us, what are you going to do now, big boy?
Well, I think this is more about, the way I see it anyway, is with the U.S. economy down so far, and of course this new issuance of $740 billion to the Pentagon, that the United States, as you know, always rescues its Northrop Grumman's and stuff of the military-industrial complex and its arms manufacturers. And war is, of course, one way to do that.
That's what a lot of this is about, I'm afraid to say. The business with Russia, the rhetoric over Russia, the Taiwan situation, the South China Sea situation, freedom of navigation in the South China Sea. Interestingly, Chaz pointed out that the navigation in the South China Sea is 67% Chinese. So we're creating freedom of navigation predominantly for the Chinese. At any rate, all of these situations are concerning right now. And the one you mentioned earlier, Iran, is as concerning, though maybe not quite as serious. It's as concerning with regards to this administration, what it might do between now and Inauguration Day, 20 January, right. Because it's shown it has absolutely no decency about it with regard to doing crazy things.
Well, what bothers me the most is when you see the United States pulling out of the Human Rights Organization and then also sanctioning the ICC court. It's like the U.S. is above any and all laws. And that bothers me because of what you mentioned there with the treatment of prisoners. And of course, like Pompeo talking about those Uyghur Muslims, they were okay to use in Syria, because Syria, as others have reported, that over 5,000 were over there trying to overthrow Assad. And this, I've got other notes on that for tonight here. But let me jump here for some clarity on a CNN article where it talked about Soleimani there, who was killed by the U.S. airstrike that most people know about now. They said that Iran's supreme leader, Ayatollah Khomeini there, once called him a living martyr of the revolution. But the United States viewed Iran's top general as a ruthless killer. Now, you worked with him, didn't you, in early Afghanistan?
Well, I didn't work with him personally, but certainly the United States worked with Iran in the initial days of our invasion of Afghanistan to try and get al-Qaeda and the Taliban. And it was a fairly advantageous relationship. We were working well together. In fact, I would say that the Iranians were helping us as much as any other third party until President Bush gave his State of the Union address, wherein he called them a part of the axis of evil, along with North Korea and Iraq. And even after that, they still continued to cooperate because they're a very rational regime. And it was in their own self-interest to help us defeat the Taliban, because we forget the Taliban had killed a number of Iranian diplomats inside Afghanistan and were antagonistic to Iranian interest and Iranian trade and so forth and so on. So the Iranians wanted to get rid of the Taliban as badly as we did and were helping us at the time.
Right. And then we have that statement from Biden where he said that the Taliban aren't enemies of the United States, and the White House confirmed that under Obama. To me, it's
truly was a strange time when 9/11 occurred with regard to what the United States took upon itself to do. We had diplomatic relations with the Taliban. We recognized them as the official government of Afghanistan. We were dealing with them in terms of turning over bin Laden. And while I was not privy to those specific negotiations, I've had people who were tell me that there was a real good chance that had we persisted, we might have gotten at least the key al-Qaeda leaders, which you'll remember we did not get until years later, out of Afghanistan just by diplomatic means. But the decision in Washington apparently was, no, we really screwed up here. We let these guys attack us and kill almost 3,000 Americans. We have to show the American people that we're going to be brutal in response. And so we decided we'd go ahead with the war, even though there was a potential for a diplomatic solution before we actually executed the war.
Okay, and so that gets right back to the same scenario here with Syria, which is where we have that, I forget his name there, but who was actually lying to the Trump administration to keep about the number of troops and stuff in Syria. To me, it's just like they want to keep everyone scattered around to keep these conflagrations going. And I listened to Scott Ritter there, who was on the Gray Zone with Aaron Maté the other night here, and they were talking about this second Iranian assassination there, this nuclear scientist there, and Scott Ritter said that he was a nothing. He was building these like little reactor type things, and that was about it. But there was no nuclear program there. The only thing Scott Ritter didn't mention was that Turkey and Brazil had inked a deal out with Iran, in which the United States squashed so that Iran wouldn't be producing its own or enriching its own uranium and stuff, which was only up to 20%, which was in line of duty with their so-called agreements with the JLPCA and the nuclear agreement with the IAEA. But again, this is all back to where Netanyahu brags that he got Trump to kill the deal and like that. And then I'm upset to see that article where that I forget the general there, but he said U.S. general states that U.S. soldiers should be prepared to die for Israel. I'm going, you know, it does not make sense to go into this stuff. Beating a dead horse, which even the Mossad and CIA back in 2012 admitted that the Iran didn't have a nuclear program, but they keep harping on this stuff. And the one thing that bothers me the most out of this is Iran's third leading cause of cancer of death is cancer, and that reactor is a nuclear medical reactor. And everyone knows that we have to enrich way up past 80% or something like that to even go nuclear. But it's been stated, even by Scott Ritter, that that's against their fatwa, I guess you call it, to go nuclear.
Yeah, it is. I actually had the Iranian foreign minister in the regime of Ahmadinejad, which was a much more hardcore regime than the current one of Rouhani. And he said to me in New York City, right there standing in front of me in clear English, we have a fatwa, and the fatwa makes it an abomination, an anathema. That's a good religious term for an abomination. In terms of the Ayatollah, it is un-Islamic, and therefore we have made a decision to not develop a nuclear weapon. How do you want us, he asked me, and then he used an English word, very esoteric English word, but he used it. He said, how do you want me to operationalize that? Would you like us to go to the UN Security Council and pronounce it to the world? Would you like us to cut our wrists and bleed so that you get some blood on the document? What is it you want us to do to convince you that we are not trying to build a nuclear weapon? Guy was very convincing.
Yeah, and another thing I think about is when 4 days ago I saw a tweet where think tank idiot, I call him, but he had said the fact about bringing democracy to Iran, and when in fact I had to laugh at that because Iran does have a democracy where even Jews are elected into their parliament, and yes. These are the same Jews that have refused $50,000 each to move to Israel,
This is, by the way, the country that probably has more democracy than any of our allies in the region: Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Bahrain, Kuwait. So our calling it an undemocratic country or an autocratic country or whatever is just a farce.
Right. So in March 20th of 2015, an interview you on CNN, you said that Iran is probably the most democratic country in the Persian Gulf region right now. And we can go right back to Venezuela now, where just 2 days ago they had their midterm elections there. And Max Blumenthal was down there, and he says, he interviewed quite a few people, and they are laughing at America right now with its so-called democracy, its elections, or like that. And it's almost like listening to Pompeo talking about the autonomy of Hong Kong while trying to overthrow Venezuela. I mean, it's like you said, it's like a constant badgering back and forth, you know.
No, we are the world's biggest hypocrites. There's no question about that. Whether it's a friend of mine in Berlin or a friend of mine in Tokyo or a friend of mine in Paris telling me that, that's what they think we are. Today, our allies, our friends, and, of course, our enemies think that we are the world's largest and most laughable, but sadly dangerous, too, hypocrite.
Right. And I had recently posted a link. It was to the Jewish Virtual Library, where it says U.S. Emergency Oil Supply Pact with Israel. And I had that up there, and the ADL had Twitter remove it, and then they went over to the Jewish Virtual Library and removed that link there. But it was I don't recall the specifics of it there, but this was basically in form of what the United States will guarantee Israel's oil supply. And that over America's, too. And to me, that sounded kind of treasonous there. But I've got a kind of like a three-part related stories that I'd like to read to you here. But I've got a break coming up here really short here. So we'll have to hold that off there. But the my views on this network here with this show is human interest. And there's a toll that's being played out here. And I'll get into that here. I'm not sure how long you can stay here. My show's only an hour or so. But there's my music here. So anyway, I'll return to you here in just a second. So stay tuned, and everyone. And we'll be right back here with Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson, retired, here on Perception Management.
Everybody rolls with their fingers crossed. Everybody knows the war is over. Everybody knows the good guys lost. Everybody knows the fight was fixed.
Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Is your property a financial burden and causing you grief? Have you tried to sell but can't find buyers? Or are you just too busy to sell your property? Don't worry. We have the right solution for you. We buy properties as is, with cash, close in 30 days, and pay all closing costs. Our service is ideal for property owners who are in pre-foreclosure, have high-end repair costs, experiencing financial hardship, going through costly divorces, are relocating, need cash for retirement, suffering family loss, or have tax liens. Whatever your situation may be, we can help you sell your property and get the money you need. If you own a single-family home or multiple family units, call us for a free consultation at 888-910-1037. That's 888-910-1037. Or visit our website at cashingproperty.com. That's cashingproperty.com. Sell your property fast and leave all your worries behind.
Extendivite has proven time and again it really works. Here's a testimonial from Amazon.com. I am only 40, but I have put my body through hell working in manufacturing for 20 years. I recently started to notice a buzzing feeling along with a stuttering sensation with my heart. I had a full cardio stress done, which I passed. I decided to try Extendivite after getting the jingle stuck in my head. Halfway through the bottle, I really did notice a difference. After getting home from work, I would just sit in a chair for a few hours feeling like crap, and this stuff reduced that feeling along with heart discomfort to almost nothing. Extendivite is only $69.95 for a two-month supply. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com. That's HEARTDROP.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
Please view, like, and subscribe to our YouTube channel, Stop Terrorism. Please contact us if you or anyone you know who wants to be on our show at thetruthpharmacy@gmail.com. Keep it real. Take the red pill.
My friends are gone and my hair is gray. I ache in the places where I used to play. And I'm crazy for love, but I'm not coming home. I'm just paying my rent every day in the Tower of Song. I said to Hank Williams, how lonely does it get? Hank Williams hasn't answered yet, but I hear him coughing all night long. Oh, 100 floors above me in the Tower of Song.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Keith Rogers here with Perception Management with our special guest here, retired Colonel Lawrence Wilkerson. Mr. Wilkerson, right before this break here, I was talking about this emergency oil supply with pact with Israel here, but I have three related stories here, and I'd like to kind of get your opinion on them. One is this 1,900-kilometer onshore pipeline from Israel up through the Greek mainland via Cyprus. And then we have Turkey, who's now in the drilling and disputed waters off the coast there. And we have the U.S., who's actually still buying Russian LNG gas and exporting it back to Europe, which doesn't make sense whatsoever. But now, on top of all this and the confusion, that Pompeo earlier yesterday said, despite our warnings, Turkey moved ahead with his purchase of testing the S-400 system for Russia, or from Russia. And then they said today that sanctions on Turkey's SSB demonstrates the U.S. is fully implementing the CAATSA and will not tolerate significant transactions with Russia's defense sector. So we now have the U.S. sanctioning a NATO member. And I think there might be something due to this push through Israel's oil and stuff, too. But what do you think about the U.S. sanctioning another NATO member?
I think it's probably it's been a long time since I've looked at the actual paperwork, as it were. But I think it's a requirement, not necessarily that the United States sanction Turkey, but that NATO do something. There is no provision, as I recall, I'm almost positive of this, there is no provision for denatoing a country. That is to say, you cannot ask a country to leave NATO. In my opinion, that was a mistake that the originators of the alliance made when they created it. But you can't. There's no provision for that. But you can punish them. You can do things like sanction them, like reprimand them, like send a demarche or whatever.
Well, the EU isn't, Pompeo hasn't been able to get the EU on board with this right now. So Washington's
but the EU is an economic union, really.
Yeah.
It's not even a political union of much worth anymore. NATO is a military alliance and a political alliance, but as a military alliance, it can't have its members doing things like this. Because in the case of the S-400s, of course, and whatever might follow that, because Turkey, once it's done it, might do it with other things, it kills interoperability. You can't operate together if you're using other people's equipment. So, and it's also a blow to the United States because the United States, of course, likes to sell to NATO countries.
Well, the other thing I heard, though, is that the United States, in retaliation, could go ahead through its banking system, go ahead and drop the currency even further down, which might cause the people in Turkey to rise up against Erdogan. And the way Erdogan is at times, maybe he might seize that base over there. To me, it's like when I listen to you talking about the national security doctrines and stuff. From all the former CIA that I have studied in depth, one of the provisions of the NSC 68 was to push or drive those people or parties into the sphere of Russian influence. And that way, the Pentagon has their evil Satan, which bolsters the arms industry and the constant buildup. I mean, logistically thinking, since 1950, imagine the amount of arms and money spent through this NSC 68 to present and how this country would look today had that been sent or spent here at home rather than gallivanting all over the world.
Well, there's no question that we have spent an awful lot of money in the multiple trillions, clearly, on things that we probably didn't need to spend the money on. If you explain to the average American, Montanan, Dakotan, South Carolinian, whoever they happen to be, the real reasons we've spent all that money and the real threat or lack thereof that existed for the duration of the Cold War, most of them would probably go out and get a 270 Winchester and hunt your butt down and kill you. Because we have been absolutely ridiculous with the money that we've spent on the military instrument during the Cold War and now after it. And this after it is even more unconscionable than during it, because there is no threat out there that warrants $1 trillion plus a year. And that's what we're spending now. You know, we hide it. We say it's a $750 billion defense budget. Oh, that's bad enough. But when you add in the Veterans Administration, when you add in the intelligence budget for the CIA, when you add in the Homeland Security budget, when you add in the nuclear budget, which is in the Department of Energy, when you add all these other things, which are clearly parts of national security, it's over $1 trillion every year. We have no business spending that kind of money when we got kids who can't get a college education. We got personal debt, private debt off the charts, public debt too, for that matter. We're running a $22, $23 trillion aggregate debt, which is almost 100% of our GDP. We're adding to that debt by a trillion or two every year. My God, the OMB, the Office of Management and Budget in the White House, the CBO, the Congressional Budget Office, both have said that if we don't stop this in less than a decade, there will be no discretionary federal spending. The defense budget, on the one hand, and entitlements, on the other hand, will consume the entire federal budget. There will be no money left over for anything. This is terrible.
Yeah. I think what we'll witness is more or less we watched the collapse of the Soviet Union, and we're looking down the barrel of the collapse of the United States if it keeps going the way it is. I mean, they can keep printing money.
You're absolutely right. You're right.
But, all right, so this is the crux of my show that I wanted to ask you tonight, because I care about people. And in our exchange of emails back and forth, I gave you a little bit of history about where I came from and stuff like that. But right now, as you mentioned with the deal with Afghanistan, we have the 100,000 deaths over there attributed to civilian deaths through the Afghan papers. And this goes on through all these CIA operations throughout Indonesia, East Timor, and the list goes on and on. And then we have Bolton's own lips that Venezuela was all about the oil and that the U.S. corporations were going to be running that. And it's no different than the theft of the Syrian or Iraqis' oil. But, you know, what I see here is this constant buildup, and then the fact is the cost. And so in lying to the people, as you've mentioned back in September 2018, you talked about this neoconservative agenda regarding like the Syrian war and Iran, all this stuff. But the way it threatens, and this gets right back into our financial aspects of this country, but it further endangers us with a direct conflict with Russia. And I've mentioned here, this is where the NSC 68 doctrine confirms that. And it's always Russia did it. You know, all the media, especially MSNBC, CNN, stuff like that, it's always Russia did it, you know. And I can't help but think of, you know, like with all these election scandals and alleged hacking by Russia, that while millions of Americans, as you mentioned, can't pay their bills and they're, you know, they're lined up in miles for food and everything, that they keep passing these other budgets here, but looking at a war, and as you called being in the interim of being long-term bogged down with military forces in a major conflict, and I don't know if you caught Vice President Pence's speech at West Point, but he told those graduates there, he says, get ready to look for actual battle, and he named the areas, which was Asia, Russia, and of course Venezuela and Iran. And I mean, I just can't see how they would do this. And now we have John Bolton using the same PNAC terms of a new Pearl Harbor with Pompeo now with the recent alleged hack. And this is what I thought about this whole thing is the human cost. Now you mentioned veterans. Well, I have on here, I've highlighted the 307,000 veterans who were allowed to die at the hand of the VA, not some enemy. Also, since 2008, it's been documented that 60,000 veterans have taken their own lives. And that special report I've read there from RAND, which talks about a special study from 18 to 34-year-olds. And now, sadly, this is where we're down to the crux of it, because in 2018, 57 Marines and 22 Special Ops took their lives, 13 Navy committed suicide, and now in 2019, the Air Force just upped that number. It was 122, but now it's 137 active duty that committed suicide. And this year, so far, it's 98. And so what is the I guess if there was something to ask as far as help, what is to help these boys who mainly, and there's a documentary on this called the Psychiatry in the Military, The Hidden Agenda, where it talks about 97% of those enlisted and veterans are on some type of SSRI-type drug, which many cause depression there. So, and of course, all you got to do is just say you look depressed and report to the doctor like that, you know. So how much of our life's blood is worth this military adventurism around the world? Towns are being erased from our country.
This is an unconscionable situation, as you've just outlined briefly. The suicide rate, the amputee rate, the post-traumatic stress rate, and so forth. And it's aided and abetted by the military-industrial complex, which is making profits off these wars. So yeah. If you want to look at the reason, one of the reasons that a lot of these guys are suffering from post-traumatic stress, committing suicide even, look at the endless stupid wars in which they have to participate. Just think about that for a moment. Three tours in Iraq, Three tours in Iraq and one in Afghanistan. Two in Afghanistan and one in Iraq. This is what these boys and girls are doing. And, oh, by the way, they're less than 1% of a 330-million-person country. Let me say that again. They're less than 1% of a 330-million country. That means the other 99% ain't doing squat. That means right. They aren't drafted. They aren't subject to conscription. They aren't going to go in the military. They don't even know there's a war going on in Afghanistan. They don't even know that people are risking their lives in Africa, in Syria, and other places around the world. They shouldn't be. Stop the endless stupid wars, and I guarantee you, you'll reduce the suicides and you'll reduce the rate of post-traumatic stress and everything else. Stop those stupid endless wars.
I've watched the endless footage of Vietnam veterans that were up in Canada, many who fled from the United States, and we had the McNamara's morons, as they called it, who were drafted, 100,000 of them, hill boys, they called them. But then they had like between 26 to 34,000 of those on rotation from Vietnam who also, after returning home on rotation, fled to Canada. But when you listen to their stories about what they were doing and stuff, naming the war crimes and stuff that they wanted no part of, I think this is where most people are disenfranchised, is because they don't see what a soldier has to go through. And I have, and which is sad to say, is I have audio from these young lads over there in Iraq. It's on a 7-hour video loop there of the journalism being sold the Iraq war. And then the second part of the video is explaining to each other how we were lied to by the Pentagon. And then the third part is listening to these boys riding in their Humvees and stuff, and the way they thought of how cheap life was. And this is what they're turning a lot of people into. And it reflects back home here, because a lot of people don't care because it's not their child. And that's what bothers me.
Well, it bothers me too. And it bothers me that this less than 1%, which comes from, incidentally, West Virginia, Alabama, Mississippi, South Carolina, the interior of Oklahoma, the interior of Maine, and so forth. These are boys and girls who never seen $50,000 in their life, don't ever expect to see $50,000 in one place in their life. And a recruiter walks up and says, hey, you graduated from high school. How'd you like to have this $50,000 signing bonus and be in the infantry? I'm signing up. I'm going. And then they come home after being told that they were fighting for freedom, justice, apple pie, mom, America, patriotism, and so forth. And they've murdered men, women, and children. They've displaced people from their homes. They've destroyed people's homes. And we ask why they commit suicide? Come on, give me a break.
Yeah. Now, that's that again, that's why I've always tried to highlight this, because it's not just here. And then, of course, a lot of Americans are not shown because of our complicit media. Like even like your service in Vietnam, when you talk about preventing a war crime, when you actually look at what like napalming and stuff does to the bodies of individuals and stuff, but people don't care about it, see? And that's the problem with Iraq. Or I mean, they're trained to hate evil Muslims and stuff, and it's all a CIA psyop to me.
That's a lot of it, and it's been going on now for so long. I mean, we could go back to the Mexican War. You know, Grant said the Mexican War was one of the most abominable things he'd ever participated in, and he wished he'd never participated in it. What the Mexican War was for was first aggrandizement to gain California and Texas and so forth, but it was also for slavery. It was a war fought for slavery because they needed Texas as a slave state to balance what was becoming more non-slave than slave. So we've been doing this for a long time, but today it's just flat-ass egregious. When you look at a Marine and you tell him he was in Iraq in order to keep America safe, he's going to laugh you back to the boondocks, because they know they're not stupid people. They know wars... Yeah, they're for Lockheed Martin, they're for Grumman, they're for Boeing, they're for Exxon Mobil, they're for some stupid president who hasn't got his ass in gear, whose macho decision to go to war in Libya, for example, stinks to high heaven. These things are not in any way, fashion, or form for the security of America or for the promotion of democracy and human rights and so forth, they're for profit.
Yeah, and I think there's something coming down the pike, as they call it, because like with that mosque shooting down in Australia, it was a day later that over what 50 or 52 people lost their lives, allegedly. We're never a witness to this. We're just ear witnesses. But they use that to seize the guns of the people in Australia. But Chris Kyle, four terrors in Iraq, he's credited with killing 155 Arab Muslims over there. And he's hailed at as a hero there. And you look at the movie sales of that, the proceeds of what that went to. And this, I mean, this is used to indoctrinate the next set of victims, I call it, you know, to go out and wage war on usually the indigenous people of some third world.
That's it. We're going out and making war on tribes. We're eliminating tribes. That's what we're doing. remember that when we did that out west?
I just did a meme of that, Mr. Wilkerson. It had all the tribes of the United States of the Native Americans. And then it says the United States before immigration. And we always use this because of that term pluralism, we, like you just mentioned the Mexican War, then we had the Native American Wars, and yet today we call this our country. Well, it's no different than being in Syria and calling it our oil, or Iraq, our oil, you know. I mean, a country, it's like you can't build an empire and retain a public off of theft, if you know what I mean.
Well, you can't build at least an aspirational democracy. You know, we aspire to be a democracy. We aspire to be good people and so forth. If what you're doing in the background is murdering other people in order to get their oil, their territory, or whatever, you just can't do that. Let's face it. We are an empire. Just like the Roman Empire, just like the British Empire, we have some attributes that are positive that they didn't have, but we also have some terrible attributes. And the terrible attribute we have right now is that we are waging endless war. I have students who come into my seminar now. Now, remember, they're 19, 20-year-old young men and young women. And they look at me and they say, Professor, I've never lived in a country that wasn't at war. That's a hell of a thing. They've never lived in a country that wasn't at war. We've been at war since 9/11. We're still operating on the same authorization for the use of military force that Congress granted President George W. Bush the day after 9/11. This is absurd.
And that very technology to fight these wars is now being turned on the American public.
Yes. Yes.
It's saddening. Too. You know, yeah, I mean, when you sit back and look at, I mean, Tulsi Gabbard right now is trying to reverse the NDAA. But again, when you hear about Russian spying and Chinese spying, well, remember, like
nobody
this hack that they just
like
mentioned.
Yeah,
but with
like
this hack they just mentioned, you know, if the NSA hadn't have had back doors built into every router and modem, you wouldn't have that problem. We'd have our security and everything like that. But see, that everyone's being spied on, you know, or Merkel's being spied on.
I was just reading in David Vine's book. I went back to check the footnote even in the sources because I couldn't believe what he was saying, but what he was saying is accurate. His sources are immaculate. We have in 1947 to 2002, we have engaged in formal action to overthrow over 188 governments. That formal action included oftentimes, probably 60-70% of the time, buying newspapers in the country, buying
La
business
Prenza.
Leaders. I mean, just incredible what we have done. And then we have the gall to accuse Russia of trying to do similar things to us. Give me a break.
Yeah, I listened to quite a few of the CIA, former CIA. Those are the ones I call the real heroes of this country, the former CIA, NSA, FBI, those that come forward and show what the establishment's all about. And a lot of people, though, they're caught with that, my country wouldn't do that. You know, they just don't realize what's going on behind the scenes there. Anyway, we're getting close to the end of the show here. So, but I really wanted to thank you for taking your time out, because I know you're busy and everything like that. But if you get some of those articles that you're telling about, especially that book you're just telling about, that David Vine there, you might email me that information there, because I'd sure like to look it up there, because I read all these CIA, ex-CIA books and stuff all the time like that, and I just can't believe what's been done in our name, and that's why I understand why people hate us, you know?
Yeah, I'll send it to you tomorrow.
Okay, sounds good there. But anyway, do you have anything else to talk about other than...
Another book I'd recommend is Eric Edstrom's book, Un-American. That will just... you can't keep the tears back. He's in Afghanistan, okay, and West Point graduate, and, you know, gung-ho patriot and everything else. And by the time you get through with his tour there, he's had it. He's absolutely had it.
Yeah.
Presents to you in that book are just, they're just horrifying.
Yeah, and the other thing I was going to mention to you before we time out here, but... Eva Bartlett and Vanessa Beely, I'm not sure if you're sure know who they are, but they're two journalists that have been up and down through Ukraine, Syria, and Iraq. And they're being labeled basically as treasonous and stuff for reporting the facts on the ground there, basically highlighting how the Syrian Observatory, which is ran by one man who's out of the UK and hasn't been in Syria for 15 years, how they keep reporting all these chemical weapons and stuff. But we know how U.S. policy is, they draw these so-called red lines, and like with Assad, why, if you have a red line drawn, would you invite weapons inspectors in there, the OPCW, and then go out 15 miles from where they're at and launch chemical weapons? It doesn't make sense, you know.
I think that's been completely destroyed. If by no one else, the two or three OPCW individuals who've come out and said it.
Yeah. But once in the news, once in the news, they always use that because that sticks into people's brain, you know. Anyway, that's it. Yep. My time's up here, but I really thank you for coming on there, and my best to your beautiful wife that was sneaking around the background there. She reminded me of my mom. So, but anyway, thanks for coming on, okay? All right,
thank
my best
you,
to you there.
Happy holidays and stay safe.
Yeah. Merry Christmas to you, okay? Thanks for everyone tuning in tonight for Perception Management here. Robert Ravo's up next there. Please stay tuned for him. Kenneth, thank you in the control room. And all the listeners in the chat room and out there in the radio land. So we'll talk to you next Sunday. Thanks for tuning in.
And now I'm so tired of it all. In life and love.
Hello, I'm Dr. Leonard Horowitz. I was right 30 years ago in warning the world about threatening lab virus outbreaks, AIDS, and Ebola. I was right 20 years ago when FBI Director Robert Mueller made me a suspect in the anthrax mailings because I warned the Bureau before the CIA's biocrime and Cipro sales psyops happened. I was right about COVID-19 being an AIDS-laced mutagen plan to resurge this fall to excuse officials' profitable depopulation globalization agendas. And I was right about the only safeguards being antioxidants and holy spiritual sustenance. Vitamin C, D, zinc, chlorophyll, oxygen, and oxysilver especially transmits the frequency resonance to neutralize the expanded function bioweapon. Oxysilver is a double superconductor of the healing power of love. It is the first nutraceutical invented to amplify prayer power and the faithful, loving intention of your heart. Buy, try, and stockpile oxysilver through HealthyWorldStore.com.
You're listening to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Because you can handle the truth.